Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and it is Wednesday, the 7th of July. This hour of the program, cheating in surveys of 14,000 undergraduate college students over the last 4 years, an average of 61% admitted to cheating on assignments and also on exams. This hour of the program, we're talking about why cheating is so widespread, how students are cheating, and how we combat this. Our guest is Professor Don McCabe. He's a professor of organization management at Rutgers University. And over the last 15 years, he's done extensive research on college cheating, surveying over 100,000 students at more than 140 colleges and universities in the U.S. and also in Canada. He's also surveyed over 18,000 high school students in the U.S. during the last 5 years. His work has been published widely in business, education, and sociology journals. And he is founding president of the Center for Academic Integrity. That's a consortium of over 350 colleges and universities based at Duke University who are joined in a united effort to promote academic integrity among college and university students. Professor Donald McCabe, thank you so much for being with us. Good morning.
Good morning. My pleasure to be here.
Great to have you here. Let's look at those numbers. That just seems like a huge number of students, 61% admitted cheating on assignments. Has that number gone up significantly decade by decade?
It depends on what you look at and what colleges you look at. It's all over the lot. But generally speaking, I think it's very fair to say that since the 1960s, it actually is up quite a bit. But in the last decade or so, it's probably down somewhat. But it's my view that it may not actually be down in terms of what's actually going on, but down rather because students no longer feel it's important to admit it. They just don't assume what they're doing is cheating, even though, you know, most surveys would indicate that it is.
And their cheating may be a little bit more sophisticated, perhaps?
In some cases, it's extremely sophisticated. You know, in some cases, if the students would spend that time studying the material, they'd be better off in the long run. They'd probably do just as well and then retain the material.
Right, exactly. Why do students cheat?
Depends on the student. For some, it's pressure from their parents, pressure from if they're in high school, you know, the college admissions process. If they're in college, the graduate admissions process. And some cheat just because of the thrill of getting away with it.
I'm wondering if the example they see in the bigger society in terms of athletes taking steroids, in terms of politicians sometimes plagiarizing other people's words, has an influence.
There's no question that that's an issue. In fact, I've often said to people that I could take, you know, in addition to the numbers that I get on my surveys, I provide space for students to give me open-ended comments, which I try and make some sense out of. And on those open-ended comments, if I put out a group of, you know, maybe a half a dozen different years that I've done surveys, you can tell by those comments when the survey was done, depending on whether they're blaming President Clinton, Enron, Michael Milken, you know, whomever. And it's their fault that I'm cheating. Look what's going on in the larger society. What's the big deal with a little bit of cheating?
Is there truth in that?
Well, I think the students certainly believe that there is, and to some degree, I agree with them.
What do you ask students on your surveys?
A whole array of questions. First of all, the key part of my survey, which actually comes towards the middle of the survey in terms of how students approach it, I'm asking questions about what they've done and how serious they consider these different behaviors to be. And I'm up to a list of probably 25 or more behaviors now, some of which are incorporated in my global statistics and some of which are not. I also ask them what others are doing as a kind of a sanity check to make sure that I'm not getting overly low numbers of self-reported cheating. And I also ask them what their faculty and their campus does to try to prevent cheating. And then I provide them a chance to tell me whatever they want to tell me about cheating.
And tell me about the kinds of cheating they do. Is it looking over somebody's paper, or does that date me so much? Does it have to do more with finding papers on the internet?
It's the entire gamut. Certainly looking over somebody's shoulder at their test or exam when you're sitting in an exam room still remains a big factor. There's no question that goes on a fair amount, and the students are quite into that. But also, it does range all the way up to various forms of cheating on the internet, downloading papers in some cases. Much more common are students who will take bits and pieces. You know, they'll go to several websites, and they'll argue that they're actually doing research, but they'll conveniently neglect to put the sites down so that they can use the material word for word rather than have to rephrase it. And in some cases, when they wait to the last minute to do an assignment, they will just download the entire assignment.
Considering the vast amount of material, Professor McCabe, that is on the Internet, isn't it almost impossible to detect whether or not somebody has taken something from the Internet?
I think it is. Certainly people like iParadigms, who runs Turnitin.com, the most popular plagiarism detection software that's out there, would disagree. They feel that they have a very high percentage of hits, but I've played some games with their technology, put papers of my own in there to see, you know, if it would pick it up, and it has not. In some cases, it picks up false positives in others. So I think it's arguable how much we're picking up. It certainly acts as a deterrent for students. I don't think there's any question about that, but it needs to be used carefully.
Aren't students, I think about when I grew up, and we would be terribly afraid, I would think, if we got caught plagiarizing. It would just be terrible shame on us. Don't students worry about shame?
I think some do, but most don't, because, you know, their feeling is, you know, I'll hear comments from students, particularly those attending state universities, obviously, you know, my parents are paying taxes for me to go to this place. They wouldn't dare throw me out. And their first defense is they go to their parents. And, you know, a lot of teachers no longer will report because it's such a hassle. You know, if they report a student, they're dragged into the process. The next thing they know, they're hearing from the parents, how could you do this to my child? I think that's probably a little more prevalent at the high school level, but it goes on a lot at the college level as well. If you talk to any dean of student judicial affairs at any university, bar none, I'm sure they have horror stories they could tell you about some of the things that parents have done to defend their children.
Shame on parents. How can you go to the parents and they say, how can you do this to my child? Your child cheated, for heaven's sake.
Well, of course, you know, their big argument is that the resolution, the penalty that's going to be applied, far outweighs what the child did. And, oh, come on, all they did was plagiarize a little bit of information. What's the big deal? And you're going to put this blot on their record so that when they apply to medical school or law school or business school, whatever it might be, for the graduate level, they're not going to get in because of what you're doing. And that's unfair. That's, you know, the penalty far outweighs the crime.
What are the penalties usually?
All over the lot. At some schools, and they're very small in number, but there are a few schools that still remain where they have what's called the single sanction penalty, where anybody that's proven to have cheated is dismissed from the university. Much more typical at the high end is expulsion for a brief period of time, or suspension, actually, for a period of time. You know, one or two semesters is quite common some places, even for what students might even consider moderate cheating rather than big cheating. And then you have some schools that really don't have a specified chart of penalties to go with offenses. They make up they determine a decision as they go along, and depends very much on the circumstances, who the student is. In some cases, you know, you'll hear accusations that athletes get away with a lot more, that children of members of distinguished alumni get away with more, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the punishment should be?
Well, I do subscribe to the theory that it depends on the how egregious the penalty, you know, how egregious the offense was. Certainly for obvious plagiarism, large-scale plagiarism, I think suspension at a minimum, you know, I'm a believer, I should back up one step here, I'm a believer that, you know, as educators, we have an obligation to help students learn. So our objective should not be to throw them out if possible. So I'm a big proponent of giving students at least one chance. If we've given them that one chance on a serious offense and we've, you know, rehabilitated them in some way, we have a lot of schools now led by the University of Maryland that have developed programs for students who have been caught cheating that they have to complete in order to get back into good standing in the school. You know, if somebody has completed a program like that and then cheats again, I'm in favor of at least suspending them and maybe even expelling them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty strict, but after, you know, on the second offense plus.
Well, it's such a shame, because if you cheat, you don't. If the business, and this makes sense, is to help students learn, you don't learn very much if you're plagiarizing.
Well, students will argue, though, I've never been able to sort this out completely, but there's no question in my mind that students will talk about cheating in courses that they feel they shouldn't have to take to begin with, or where the faculty member is not teaching them anything, where, you know, all they're doing is reading the book. Then a faculty member gives exams that come from other sources, which they consider not to be fair. So if there's anything going on that they think is unfair, they feel quite entitled to teach. Or if, you know, you have an engineer that we're making take a literature course or a literature major that we're making take a science course, their reaction is, you know, I don't need this. If I wanted to be a science major, for example, I would have majored in science, but I'm majoring in literature because I was never good at science, and you're making me take this, and it's going to pull down my GPA, and I'm not going to get into XYZ graduate school, which is my life dream.
Hmm. Was that a key word you just used there, they feel entitled?
I think so, yes. In fact, there's an Institute of Ethics out on the West Coast, the Josephson Institute of Ethics, that did a survey many years ago of high school students. So I love the term they used. They described the students as the itties, the IDIs, the I deserve it generation. And I think there's very much that going on still today.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got to get rid of that. Nobody deserves it, right?
Well, if you got some good ideas, there's a lot of colleges would love to know what it is.
We may hear some good ideas from our audience as we continue talking. Tell me more about this film or whatever it is that many schools now have instituted that students must view before they start school, an anti-plagiarism tutorial.
Again, they're all over the lot. You know, some will have some on fundamental integrity at the school to make them aware. You know, particularly single sanction schools, for example, will have a film or, you know, an orientation session that very much focuses on the importance of integrity at that school, what's expected of the student, how the student will be dismissed from the university if they violate those expectations, all the way down to schools that do nothing. But I believe what you're talking about is kind of a new trend among a lot of schools of trying to train students so they fully understand what plagiarism is. A lot of students in my surveys, for example, and also at their own schools, claim ignorance when it comes to really knowing what needs to be footnoted, what doesn't need to be footnoted. You know, I'll typically get some students along the way who will say, you know, if I read in a book that the sky is blue, do I have to footnote that? And obviously they don't. But, you know, if they want to describe the detailed composition of the air that we breathe, then, you know, they should footnote that because they don't have that knowledge stored away someplace in their mind. Mm-hmm. So they have a lot of confusion.
Do you think that all schools should have some kind of discussion about integrity and ethics before students start, I don't know what, maybe even kindergarten, I don't know what level?
Well, I think we do need to push it back to the high schools. One of the reasons I got involved in some of the high school work that was mentioned when you were introducing me is, you know, I realized all of a sudden that people don't come to college as what I describe as cheating virgins. You know, they've engaged in some in high school, many of them. And I was curious what attitudes they're bringing and what experience they're bringing from high school to college. And it's extensive. In fact, cheating at the high school level is even worse than it is at the college level. And a lot of that has to do with students arguing that high school really doesn't matter. All it is a sorting process. You don't really learn things you need to know in the long run. You learn those things in college. Of course, college students are arguing you learn them in graduate school. So it's okay for them to cheat. It just escalates. But certainly, I think you have to start no later than high school and probably even earlier if you want to do it right.
Well, how would they answer the question, what does matter? If integrity doesn't matter, what matters?
Getting into the school of their choice and keeping their parents off their back.
Really?
Yeah. That comes across so loud and clear that, you know, achieving their goals far exceeds any concerns about how they do it. And I should be careful, for a large number of students, not all, there are some students who are still very concerned about integrity. You know, if I do surveys at schools that have a strong religious affiliation, you know, you'll see that come through in some cases, others not. But certainly you'll see that in some cases where, I mean, I had students tell me, you know, I don't cheat because it would be a sin against my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, for example. You know, so they've deeply internalized a value system that's important to them. But that does not carry over to most public universities. We'll get a few students like that, but generally speaking, that's not the kind of response I get at a public institution. I sometimes wonder if there aren't more students that feel that way, that just feel, you know, they don't want to express that outwardly.
We welcome phone calls. Our guest this hour is Professor Don McCabe, Professor of Management and Business at Rutgers University, author of Cheating in Academic Institutions, A Decade of Research. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. Our email address, you can send us one of those as well, talk@wpr.org. And you can follow us also on Facebook, the Kathleen Dunn, that's D-U-N-N. Show. on Facebook. To your calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program this Wednesday, Samantha Bee will be joining us, the senior correspondent on The Daily Show. She has a new book, I Know I Am, But What Are You? Let's go to phone calls as we discuss plagiarism this hour. Jim in Mellon is our first caller. Hi, Jim.
Good morning, Kathleen, and to your guest. I have two vignettes of personal experience. When I was enrolled in the University of Wisconsin Milwaukee campus, there was a Professor Schenker who was in the economics department, and he was caught putting his name on the work done by a student of his, which of course is plagiarism. And his punishment for that was to be elevated to be made a dean of the local university there. My second vignette is I was taking an economics course from a professor named Crocker, who is an extremely poor quality teacher, very, very arrogant. He gave a little speech after the midterm where he announced that he thought all C students in his class were garbage. Now, I think it's this kind of professorial arrogance and lack of a commitment to really being an inspired teacher. Because if they were an inspired teacher, I don't think students would have this impetus to cheat. I think they'd be enthralled with the subject matter and really get interested in it and really buckle down and learn what they could.
You blame it on the teachers? Do students blame it on the teachers, Professor McCabe?
They certainly do, and you hear that even more at the high school level, but you do hear a lot of it at the college level as well. And you do hear the accusation, without commenting directly on the two issues that Jim raised, you do hear the accusation of faculty members engaged in plagiarism, and because they have tenure, they get away with it, nothing happens to them. And students use that in some ways, in a perverted way, as justification for what they're doing.
Yeah. And I think we need to be careful of mentioning people's names on the air, too, because that was your opinion of the teacher, and we have no idea what that case is. So we have to assume that people are innocent until proven otherwise. Jim, thanks for the call. Julie in Oshkosh. Hi.
Hi. I am a professor at UW Oshkosh in the English department, so I've just outed myself, even without my last name. And I have various ways of dealing with plagiarism, depending on what it is. First, I go over very clearly what it is and tell them that when they have a question, they should absolutely put things in quotation marks and give the source, and to err on that side rather than the other way. But I find that inevitably there's some who don't get it, and they provide the source, but they don't put it in quotation marks. So I call that punctuation plagiarism. I give them an F on the paper, which freaks them out. They come talk to me. I show them how to fix it, and they never do it again.
Mm.
I rarely get the egregious kind, but when I do, they're out. And I have it on my syllabus that if I catch them cheating like that, they get a fail on the paper, a fail on the course, and I forward the information to the Dean of Students' office. In the UW system, we also have to give the students an opportunity to speak to us about it. I haven't had anybody who has tried to defend themselves in that case. Actually, I have had quite a few of that kind of problem. Usually, they don't do it again in another class, or if they do, they're not caught. But this IDI thing, I deserve it, it drives me nuts when they say that I am keeping them from the grade point average they need, when it's obviously they themselves who are doing it.
Are the ones keeping it. Yes, that would just drive me crazy as a teacher. I deserve it. Are you kidding me? You deserve it? Tell me, do you find that cheating is fairly widespread among your students, Julie?
It isn't. And I don't know why. I mean, I do get a lot of punctuation plagiarism on the first paper. And then I even show the class without the student's name what the issue is, and they seem to get it after that. But there's inevitably two in every class who do that. So obviously they don't understand because they're giving the source. They're not trying to pull the wool
right
over my eyes.
Right. And what about papers? Do you feel confident that your students are writing original pieces of work and haven't lifted something from that somebody wrote 15 years ago that's on the internet?
If I find a phrase that sounds like they would have used it, I look it up. It would be fun to confront them and ask them what certain words mean, but I don't do that. And I do catch papers that way. Sometimes I don't, and then I have a hard time believing that the student could be as good as they are, but some of them actually are. That sounds terrible, doesn't it? I had a colleague in graduate school, though, who was doing his dissertation on Thoreau, and a student plagiarized from Thoreau and refused back down. So my colleague took the book off his shelf and started reading it to the kid.
How can you?
He still wouldn't back down. I thought that was pretty good.
How can you do that? How do you have the nerve? Professor McCabe, you want to chime in here?
I will just briefly. I think the difference, if you listen to what Jim was saying about some faculty members that he knew of, and what Julie's saying, you have a case where I think Julie has made it clear to her students that she will pursue incidents that do occur. And I think that's very effective for, in many cases, backing students off. Not some of the, what I refer to as the nickel-dime cheating, maybe, you know, taking a phrase from the Internet without citing it, but certainly taking large-scale text or cheating on a test or, you know, anything more explicit. So I think that's a big factor and a way in which faculty can have a dramatic impact without, you know, without going to great lengths on their part. I also do faculty surveys. We haven't talked about that, but I do, at most of the schools where I do a student survey, I also do a faculty survey about what students have done, not about what faculty are doing, and I'm often criticized by students for not asking faculty what they've done. I've occasionally said I tried it once in a little experiment on one of my faculty surveys concerning student behavior, and, you know, I'm happy to report I couldn't find a single faculty member any place that was doing any cheating or at least was willing to admit it. And, you know, so I decided it's worthless trying to uncover this. But there's no question, based on what students say, that there's an awful lot going on. There's an awful lot of confirmation of the kind of things that Jim was saying in general. Again, I know nothing about those specific cases.
Right. Thank you. Julie, unless you had something else, thank you.
Okay, I actually have one more thing to say, which is just brief, and that is that in the UW system, it's considered plagiarism if a student turns in the same paper for two different classes.
Oh.
And now I'll let you go. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Julie. Great to hear from you. Thanks. Let's go to Jordan in Madison. Hi, Jordan.
Hey, thank you for taking my call, Kathleen.
You're welcome, Jordan.
Hey, I just had a comment about earlier your guest had talked about the difference between, or I shouldn't say the difference, but the idea of cheating in high school and how that changes into college. I'm 23. I'm a recent college graduate. And I remember when I was in high school, a lot of times we'd get assigned this just busy work for homework, these worksheets or like fill in the blank sheets that no one ever really took seriously. And it wasn't uncommon if you had, you know, two or three of those a day in different classes, you know, two or three friends, everybody would do one and then just copy each other's fill in the blank answers. And, you know, no one ever really batted an eye at it. I think a lot of teachers knew it went on, and no one really cared because it was this, you know, busy work, monotonous, like you're not really engaging yourself to learn that information or anything. However, when I was in high school, when it came to like writing essays or, you know, term papers or whatever, I don't think cheating was ever something that people really entertained as an idea. And this idea of like not quoting your sources or not, you know, giving those up, it just seems kind of silly, at least in my experience, to a lot of students, because you don't get marked down for being a good researcher. You don't get marked down for knowing how to cite things. You don't get marked down for, like, being good at writing a paper or writing an essay and knowing how to integrate someone else's information into your own paper. So I think on that scale, you'll see a lot of cheating variants, if that makes any sense, where some students, you know, myself included at that time, like, yeah, there's some things that we don't feel like it matters because it really doesn't. But then when it comes to, like, the more important work, there's no benefit to cheating. If you're already doing the research, why not cite it?
Right.
You've already done the research, why not cite it?
Mm-hmm. Professor McCabe.
I'm going to disagree just a little bit. I don't think enough to upset Jordan, but in my statistics, I do not include two behaviors that I have tracked over this entire almost 20-year period now that I've been doing this work. And one of them's learning what was on a test from somebody who took it in an earlier period, which is quite, you know, more common in high school than it is in college. If I included that, you know, probably have at least two-thirds, three-quarters of the students who have done that and feel there's nothing wrong with it because it's up to the teacher, you know, they should be doing a different test. Or I've only found out what the questions were, I didn't find out what the answers were, so that was okay, and all kinds of excuses. The other behavior is collaboration, which is what Jordan was referring to, I believe, where students do exactly what he described. You know, somebody will do part of the work, and then, you know, they sit down and share that work with the others. Kind of it's a time management technique, and that's a lot more common in high school than in college. So I don't even have those numbers. If I put that collaboration number in there, I think I'd be up to probably almost three-quarters of the students alone would admit that they've done collaborative work in high school, and probably, you know, more like 65%, two-thirds in at the college level. And consider nothing wrong with it, you know, in the sense that the only reason they're doing it is they're managing their time. There's too much work. I find it intriguing that there was a survey done by a group out of UCLA that's been doing a survey for years and years that suggests that, you know, a relatively modest percentage of students acknowledge that they're doing more than 6 hours of homework a night, a week. So, you know, it's ballpark an hour a night. But yet we consistently hear complaints that students have too much homework.
Right.
I can remember when I was in school, an hour a night was a breeze compared to what we normally got. You know, so students, you know, with all the electronic games they have, with all the Facebooking they do, with all the texting they do, which is consuming a lot of time, they don't want to displace that from their schedule. So they're kind of taking shortcuts on some of their academic work to make more time in their schedules.
Yeah, that's true. They find plenty of time for texting and watching television, et cetera.
Right.
What about his point about busy work? Is there such a thing as busy work? Is he saying something that teachers need to listen to? Does it encourage cheating if it's just really what many students consider a waste of time? Or do we need to know that life has some activities that we may consider a waste of time and we have to do them anyway?
Certainly students would agree with what Jordan said. You know, I'll hear that quite often as justification, and it was just busy work. It had no learning value. You know, I didn't personally learn anything from it, or I didn't see how I would. So I think much more common in cases like that, I'll hear students saying that as reasons why they've shared their work with others. And it does occur quite frequently. There's no question about it. And if they feel a faculty member is just giving it out as busy work, they will feel fully entitled to go ahead and engage in, you know, any collaborative effort that they can just to get it done and get it out of the way.
Thank you, Jordan, for your call. Mary in Milwaukee. Hi.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Hi. I was wondering if the survey was done at the graduate level, and if so, if he found any difference in the amount of cheating. I went through my graduate studies in the UW system in the sciences, and I've also noticed you're talking a lot about plagiarism, and in the class that I was a teacher's assistant in, we didn't have the students write any essays, but I did find a lot of cheating on quizzes where I could tell by the answers were worded exactly the same, that students that were sitting next to each other had cheated, and if there's an incidence of that still as much in university as plagiarism, and if there is any difference in the amount of cheating in discipline, if you find it as much in English class as much as you do in chemistry class.
Okay, I think I can answer most of those questions. You may have to remind me what one or two of them were along the way. Let me go backwards and talk first about discipline. I don't necessarily ask students which courses they've cheated in, but when I refer to my results by discipline, it's by what the student is majoring in. And unfortunately, as a member of a business faculty, I have found over the years that business students self-report more cheating than any other group on average. They are competing for that number one spot with communication majors. At one time, engineering students were way up there as well. And at the graduate level, there's a lot less cheating that goes on. But what does go on, engineering students are more competitive in a sense in terms of the amount of cheating they're doing at the graduate level versus undergraduate. But I think a lot of engineering schools have tried to convince their students at the undergraduate level that they're entering a profession and that carries with it certain responsibilities, including honest work. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you don't want that bridge to collapse when you build it because you cheated on your whatever structural
exactly.
dynamics exam or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So at the graduate level, test cheating is certainly, the self-reported level of test cheating is dramatically lower than it is at the undergraduate level.
Okay, I would have
something to do with the fact
we
that there just aren't as many tests.
Just at the point we were all, by the time we were all in graduate school at that point in our career, the pride that you have in your accomplishment seems to outweigh whatever need someone would have to cheat.
I do hear that a lot. Again, you know, I provide graduate students the opportunity for open-ended comments. You know, many of them in the sciences, for example, are telling me what their experience with undergraduates as TAs, rather than talking about themselves. But those who talk about themselves, there certainly is an indication that that they realize, you know, they've gone on because they want to be a member of a profession. It's not just getting a degree anymore in most cases. Unfortunately, again, business students, people pursuing the MBA, that's a little bit different. They stand out as a distinct group at the graduate level in terms of what they're doing. But other than that, I have to agree completely with what you just said about the pride and work being much greater at the graduate level. But despite that, you know, you still do see students who are cheating. And I think it's more common at the graduate level if you have a dissertation advisor, for example, who is engaging in shady practices, whether it be putting their name on your work or whatever it might be, as somebody suggested earlier, you feel much more justified in, you know, taking some shortcuts just to get it done and using that poor example as justification for going ahead and doing whatever it is you feel you need to do.
Thanks, Mary, so much for your call. Along similar lines here, from Pat, an email, I believe, once the habit of dishonesty is established in school, it becomes the tool of first resort in one's professional life. The recent economic crisis caused by the fabric of lies woven by professional financiers. I wish you the best in stamping out this scourge.
Well, and I got to agree with Pat. I cannot prove it, but there's certainly I've got a number of indications that what she's saying is absolutely correct. There was a gentleman whose work I've built on, and I certainly at some point wanted to mention his name, and that's a gentleman by the name of Bill Bowers, who when he was doing his dissertation in sociology for his doctorate at Columbia University back in the early 1960s, started this work, and he was kind enough to share all of his data with me so I can make some of these 90s and, you know, current comparisons to the 1960s, and he asked students what they did in high school as well as what they were currently doing in college. He found that students who cheated in high school were more likely to cheat in college than students who did not cheat in high school, and vice versa. You know, I mean, it was a definite two-way relationship there between high school and college cheating. And I've seen some evidence of that between undergraduate and graduate level cheating. I've tried to demonstrate that that's also true between student cheating at the undergraduate level and cheating later in life in the business profession. And we've certainly, we did the work and we're not able to prove that point, but we certainly didn't prove the opposite either. You know, it's still very suspect in my mind based on the data we collected, but it was not conclusive.
Amy from Schulzberg, hi.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to share with you an experience that I had when I was doing my undergraduate work. I took a literature survey course from a professor that we all really revered. And when she would give a test, she would bring in the exams, you know, give it a little explanation, set it on the desk, and say to the class as a whole, last person finished, please bring the test to my office. And we went about, you know, taking the test. Years later, we were talking about it at a reunion, and to a person, everybody said that not a single one of us ever cheated. We all, you know, anybody who was the last one took the test back to her office, and I would assume that that's because we all thought so highly of her that she would trust us, that we didn't want to violate that trust. I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, and there are faculty members that I'm aware of, you know, from what both students tell me and then, you know, for some of the faculty surveys that I've done today that are still, you know, hold that reverence in the, you know, or the students hold that reverence toward the faculty member. It makes me think, if I may just digress for a minute, what got me started in this work is I went to an undergraduate institution that had an academic honor code, and we had unproctored exams. You know, the faculty member came in, gave out the exams, left, put a note on the board where he was in case anybody had a question. Then he came in at the, and they were all men at that time, he came in at the end of the exam and collected, you know, what was on the desk and students who were still there, you know, time's up, please turn in your exams. And for years, I'm active in my class affairs, and so for years I had an opportunity to talk to more and more students from my class and ask them about what they remembered about cheating. And to a person, they didn't want to be the one, to be honest, to screw up the honor code, so they respected it. I finally found one student who said to me, I saw somebody cheat once, or at least I saw somebody try to cheat. I'm not sure they were successful, but they certainly did try. But there were 800 people in my class, so, even if it was one out of 800, I'll take those odds any day.
That's quite something. Thank you, Amy, for your call. Tom is next from Onalaska. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. Thank you for taking the call. I'd like to ask your guest if he's had a chance to contemplate the success or the relationship to the issue of the honor codes at the military academies.
I have not, for obvious reasons, I think. It wasn't obvious to me at first, but the more I think about it, I think it is obvious. Military academies have not given me permission to survey their students, nor am I aware of any surveys that their students have participated in that have become public knowledge. And, I've been involved both at West Point, Annapolis, and actually at the Air Force Academy as well, and for that matter at the Coast Guard Academy, in various events that they've done that involve alumni, and alumni will occasionally talk about how poorly they treated anybody they knew was cheating. They would shun this person, and despite that, there was some cheating that went on. It was not totally cheating free, but generally speaking, there was tremendous pressure not to cheat in that environment.
Yeah, as a grad of the Air Force Academy, I understand everything you just said, and it is somewhat dependent on the people that are received from the public at large, from the high schools that send the students. But there's still some rather significant successes in enforcing and teaching and internalizing those choices. Thanks.
Okay, there's no question. I got to agree with that. I can remember once I was at the Coast Guard Academy, and was making a presentation, and it was the third-year student sitting in front of me as I was making this presentation, and he just wasn't buying what I was saying. I was suggesting that, it's the values that you come with that probably have as much impact as the school itself. And he finally raised his hand. He said, Professor McCabe, he said, when I came here as a freshman, he said, I didn't cheat because I was afraid of getting caught. He said it had nothing to do with internalized values. But he said, I've learned over time how important it is that, if somebody needs my word when we're out on sea duty or something, how important it is they can trust it. And he said, now I've internalized those values. So, at least in his case, I was wrong.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tom, for the call. This hour of the program, Professor Don McCabe is our guest, author of Cheating in Academic Institutions, A Decade of Research. He's a professor of management and business at Rutgers University. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. Our lines have been crowded. You can get through right now. We also have an email address, talk@wpr.org, and you can follow us on Facebook at the Kathleen Dunn Show. I'm Kathleen Dunn, of course, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, the most senior correspondent on The Daily Show, Samantha Bee, who has a book about her really wacky life. I know I am, but what are you? Our phone number, 800-486-8655. Here's an email from Amanda in Wausau. My 10th grade teacher asked me if I plagiarized my paper. She confronted me in front of my art club while we were working on a project. I could feel my face turn bright red. She went on to say she'd researched the internet but couldn't find the exact phrases anywhere. It was the worst experience of my high school career. I felt that because my family didn't have a lot of money, she thought it impossible that I could write such a brilliant paper. Accusations of cheating should not be made lightly.
I have to agree with that. It shouldn't be made publicly either.
Right.
I think that was definitely a mistake on the part of the teacher. And certainly, at least at the college level now, teachers are given information that if they want to accuse a student, it should be done privately, and that it all needs to be kept very anonymous. I know there's one school, I talked earlier about schools that have single sanction systems, and there it's a small campus, so if somebody's missing from classes, people have an idea of what happened, and they sometimes have difficulty keeping things anonymous. But other than that, schools, I think, generally do a nice job on that.
Tom in Tomahawk, hi.
Hi, I just want to share a rather humorous incident about plagiarism. I was chatting with a man this after just a few days ago, who is a graduate of an institution where I taught, and he said he, out of desperation and for whatever reason, did plagiarize his paper and turned it in. And when the professor met with the class after all the papers were turned in, he said, someone in this group has obviously plagiarized. He didn't name anybody. And he said, if you think it's you, I want you to come to my office at such and such an hour. So this man who was telling me, he said he got caught. He knew he was caught. So he went to that hour, and half the class was there.
Oh.
And to the professor's credit, he went over everybody's paper who thought they had considered themselves plagiarizing, and most of them were innocent, you know, but he wasn't. So,
I thought
that was a great little anecdote about that kind of thing that happens.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. What do you think, Professor McCabe?
Well, I was just going to comment, you know, one of the things you get in this business, if it is a business, is lots of good anecdotes about stories of, you know, some of which are folklore and some of which appear to be real. But I think my very favorite is two fraternity brothers decide to go to a local women's college for the weekend when they should have been studying for an exam. And they stayed over Sunday night, which was not originally their plan. And on their way back Monday, they realized if they took this exam, they were going to bomb it. So they decided they'd tell the professor they had a flat tire on the way back. And the professor said, okay. He said, I'll, you know, let you take the exam tomorrow. And he gave them the exam, and, you know, he gave them the same exam everybody else had, which, but in their case, was only worth 50%. And on the back was one question worth 50%, and the question was, which tire? As far as I know, that actually is a true story.
Is it? That's good. Thanks, Tom, for your call. Mark in Appleton, hi.
Oh, hi. I'm a high school chemistry teacher, and it's actually started to affect our instruction, too. I think the main point is that college is almost a needed credential now, and I think a lot of people are getting university educations that really aren't interested in learning. And I think the pressure that they feel to be successful in college kind of pushes that along.
Professor McCabe.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Again, I don't have data that I can absolutely prove that, but certainly some of the comments that students make. I can remember one of the most egregious incidents I had was a student in an accounting class I was teaching, or an accounting program in which I was teaching a management class. And I labored hard and long to decide I wasn't going to give out my first F, and I gave the student a D instead of an F. The next thing I know, he's in my office. He wanted to know what he had to do to get an A in the course. And I said, for God's sakes, I said, you should have worried about this at the beginning of the course, not now. And the next thing I know, and this was a young man, probably in his mid-20s, he is crying in my office, telling me that his parents are both accountants. They always wanted him to be an accountant. He never wanted to be an accountant. He was going to prove he wasn't good at accounting.
Oh.
Now it was time to graduate, and they didn't know how poorly he was doing, and he wanted to try and graduate, not to disappoint them.
Oh. And he shouldn't have been an accountant.
Exactly. And I told him, I said, he needed four other faculty members to give him a break besides me. I said, if you get to the point where I'm the only thing standing between you and your degree, I said, we'll work something out.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, it's going to require you repeating a lot of the work. We won't be able to work it out in time for you to attend the graduation ceremony. Never heard from him again. So I have to assume he didn't convince the other faculty members.
Right. Uh-uh. Here's another email from a high school language arts teacher, Greg. Plagiarism is a problem. Do you ask whether respondents had been taught how to not plagiarize? I teach that over and over, and I think it does help. I also give zeros for cheating and lower a quarter grade by one letter if a student cheats.
Right. I do not explicitly ask that question, but I provide students several opportunities to tell me if they want about the training they've been given in plagiarism. And I do have a vaguer question about cheating in general, what kind of information they've received about the rules at their school and how they're applied and the penalties, et cetera, but not explicitly on plagiarism.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to Ed in Wautoma. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I'm a graduate of a music school and an art school, and I don't think anybody where I went to school cheated. It would have been difficult to put a tape recorder, for example, in a in a piano and, right. Sham a recital or something. So I guess the musicians and the art had to produce. It wasn't a matter of where we could do research and put it down in his room. But as a caveat of that, I would like to say that I think that young people cheat because they see that this government is a cheat and a sham, in as much as, you know, they look at black people living in ghettos exploited three times more for rent, food, insurance, et cetera, 400 years of unpaid labor, exploitation of small countries all over the world, diamonds from Africa, oil from the Middle East, et cetera, and that all moral authority has gone out of this country, and only thing that remains is the paraphernalia of the power system, you know, the gun, the club, the lash. And they just figure that they're so dumb they should get hit upside the head if they don't try to go out for number one by any means necessary.
Yeah, but that's an excuse, isn't it? I mean, who do you have other than yourself? That's what your life is. It's your honor. It's your this thing about blaming it on everybody else. I don't buy it.
But it does happen. I don't buy it either as a valid excuse. But it's happening with more and more students. You know, they look at what's going on out there. And they say, with this going on out, you know, in the real world, why should I be worried about a little bit of cheating?
Right.
Now, I don't know how they define a little bit, but, you know, they certainly use it as a justification. I'm with you that it's not an appropriate justification, but it does go on a lot.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ed, for the call. Eric in Manitowoc. Hi.
Hi. I just had a question about the ethics of this. When I was in college, my roommate and I had a discussion. I was a student of history and government and economics and politics, and a lot of those overlap. And so if I did really well on a paper, what I would do is borrow from it later. I cited everything that I'd taken from other people, but when I was taking it from myself, kind of a self-plagiarism, what are the ethical boundaries on that?
Well, that's a good question.
You know, somebody mentioned earlier about resubmitting their own paper twice or a second time. And some schools have explicit rules on that, that's not permissible. You know, I don't know of any school that has a rule that says you can do it, although it is allowed in a number of schools. But a lot of schools have an explicit statement in their guidelines that, you know, that's self-plagiarism. You can only do it with the knowledge of the second teacher. So, you know, I can remember an incident I had in graduate school, as a matter of fact, where it was a case study and it was assigned in a class, and I had already done it in a different class. And I went up and told the faculty member, and he said, well, you know, what we're studying in this course certainly comes from a different perspective than that course. I said, I understand that. I said, I can't use it word for word, but I said, I've got a lot of the work done already, and it's going to be a fairly easy paper for me to write. He said, just let me, you know, just remind me in the written document. He said, I'll grade it appropriately. You know, there was no way he was going to change the assignment for me simply because I had had exposure to it before. You know, I think it's up to the school. I'm a great believer in, you know, state your rules, and that's what you need to hold students to. If you have rules that are a little different than another place, that doesn't bother me.
Wasn't that honorable of you? My goodness.
Well, you know, I go back to what somebody said about respecting the teacher. This was a gentleman. I had him for the second time, and I had just total respect for him.
Oh, yes.
In fact, I asked him to be on my dissertation committee ultimately. That's how much respect I had for him. He wasn't exactly in my field either. But he and I just hit it off, and we've stayed in touch over the years. So
nice. All right, thanks, Eric. Pauline in Kenosha. Hi.
Oh, hi. I liked what the caller said earlier about the maybe there's people in college who just don't really even care about learning. I wonder if my experience. I wanted to ask you if my experience is kind of representative of the whole picture. I happen to be a good student, and it came easily to me, and I liked it, and I was proud of my work, and so I never much wanted, even thought about cheating. But people would come to me and ask me to write their papers, or what's the answer to this on a test, and I wouldn't do it because I just wasn't into it. But these other people, you know, it wasn't so easy for them, and yet they had to. I happened to be in a very competitive high school, and they had all these pressures that they had to live up to, and then they have to go get a job, and so they feel like it's the only way I can do it, and I'm not here because I love it. I'm here because I have to do it, and I just wonder if that's, you know, if it's true that people who, I don't know, are high achievers, naturally high achievers, do they cheat less, or is it the same?
My finding is that the good students cheat as much as the bad students, and it's the group in the middle that cheats less.
Really?
I've often said that those at the top are cheating to thrive because it's so competitive. If you're at the very top of your class, you're thinking, gee, maybe I want to go to Harvard or the University of Chicago or, you know, University of Wisconsin, whatever it might be. And it's going to be cutthroat competition to get in there, so I got to make sure I'm at the very top. If you're at the very bottom, you're cheating to survive is the way I describe it. You want to make sure you get that high school diploma, keep your parents off your back and go out and get a job, et cetera, that requires the diploma. And the people in the middle, you know, generally seem to be there to learn. Those that cheat in the middle are doing it just to reduce the amount of time they have to spend rather than great worry about their grade. You know, they'll take their B or their high C and be quite content with it and, you know, feel they've done their work honestly in many cases and no problem. But what I've divided up.
We have about 10 seconds.
Okay, all the work I do I have to have approved by an institutional review board here at Rutgers, and they no longer let me ask a detailed question about class rank. So that is a little bit older, but when I had the opportunity to get it, that's what it was.
Thanks, Professor McCabe. It was a really interesting hour. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Professor Don McCabe, author of Cheating in Academic Institutions, A Decade of Research. He's a professor of management and business at Rutgers University. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing this hour, and thanks to Chrissy as well for on-air production. We will return with another hour following the news.